There are two recognized experiences in spirituality, cataphatic and apophatic. You really don't need to know either one of them, but we'll be talking about both of those. The cataphatic is our experiencing God in creation, also known as panentheism. God in things. Okay? We see a sunset and we experience wonder from God in the sunset. We hold a child and we experience wonder from God in the child. The apophatic is the experience of God in mystery and doctrine, also known as experiencing God in the absence of God. God, who is beyond us, is mystery and hidden. God is a dark night or a cloud of unknowing. The human tendency is to see these experiences as separate from each other. We in our immaturity tend to apply a moral value to them. Experiencing God in creation or in ourselves can be labeled good. Experiencing God in darkness or absence can be labeled bad. We most often, it is true, experience God one way at a time. When we persist in keeping the two experiences separate, however, we become entrenched and limited. Our entrenchment and limitations are a result of our often unconscious imposed boundaries. It is the practice of placing a moral value on the experience. I was good, and therefore I experienced God. I was bad, therefore I did not experience God. God can only be experienced in this way. We, as a result, are not practicing willingness to be open to new possibilities. Our small selves find ways to create meaning and purpose in the experience of God that we have, and we resist any change to our concept. Concept of God is very different than an experience of God. Now, the experience of God very often develops into a concept, but it doesn't work the other way. A concept of God is limited and can be manipulated to affirm our likes and dislikes. I like a God like this. I don't like a God like that. It is generated by us. It rarely changes because our minds enjoy arguing what change means. The numerous ways that change can be interpreted, and an endless debate concerning the advisability of change. That's why they talk about churches having all of these groups that discuss and argue ad nauseum about one change or another. Not only the church, by the way, it's government as well. Any kind of institution that really doesn't want to change, you develop a subgroup to talk about change. An experience of God is limitless and cannot be controlled by us. It immediately impinges upon us. It is generated by God and causes change to happen to us without our input. Hence, the starting or creation point is different. Generally speaking, depending upon our personality and environment, we tend to gravitate toward the cataphatic or the apophatic experience of God, toward the experience of God in creation or the experience of God in the absence of God. Teresa of Avila, for example, is attracted to the cataphatic experience of God. She finds meditating on gospel stories, especially the Passion, inviting. She uses her imagination to create stories within the stories. She experiences God in moments of ecstasy, the experience of God dwelling within her, that involves her body and mind. John of the Cross, however, finds the apophatic experience of God attractive. He practices disciplines which he uses to eradicate any concept of God. He repeatedly practices what he calls nada, nothing, and blocks out thoughts, feelings, or imagination. He encloses himself in a room without images, save the cross, and refuses to notice his body or mind. As do most of us, both Teresa and John soon create boundaries and resist venturing beyond these boundaries. It should be noted that Teresa and John do periodically venture into the other experience of God, but it is not their preferred experience. Then life intervenes repeatedly for them. Teresa falls ill, seriously ill. She's been ill at various other times in her life, but in this particular time, it drags on for a long period of time. She is severely limited in her meditation exercises. She feels isolated. She cannot use her imagination. She cannot participate in Mass. Any possibility of her entering ecstasy is eliminated. She is instead often in a fevered delirium. God feels absent, and darkness surrounds her. She bemoans her predicament. She returns to her preferred practice every chance that she gets. Sometimes she feels depressed and feels it would be better if she died. She is angry with God, the nuns, and herself. Her unfulfilled expectations generate disappointment. Only gradually does she begin to sense, primarily through her reading and later with her discussions with learned men. I don't know why she never found any learned women. I don't understand that, but anyway. that darkness isn't bad, but just another way of experiencing God. It is important to note, too, that Teresa's internal experience of God, her authenticity, doesn't waver very much. She's experienced God, and that's made an impression upon her. It is her concept of God and how God relates with her that, after much resistance, changes without her permission or choice. That is, the change happens to her, though not completely. This is true of John as well. John, as we know, is kidnapped and imprisoned in a closet. He is, in the beginning of his captivity, paraded before the other Carmelites at mealtime. But his isolation is almost complete. This is something that he craved before accepting Teresa's invitation to join her movement. And in fact, he does isolate himself in this little shack. The main difference, however, is his present isolation isn't something that he caused. It is forced upon him. There is one tiny window in his cell that permits a small amount of light. He is deprived of most everything that would involve his senses. Then, inexplicably and mysteriously, he gradually begins to experience God in himself. The greater part of his life, he has practiced not permitting himself to experience God dwelling in creation. And now, in most almost complete isolation, he begins to experience God cataphatically. He rejoices in that little light that enters through the window. He wonders at the gentle breeze, probably sometimes not all that gentle, that he experiences. He discovers that he is now willing to feel the heat and the cold, whereas in the past he just blocked it out. He creates poetry, which is more in line with the cataphatic experience of God than the apophatic experience of God. Poetry is art, and we experience God through art. We can see in their writings their preferred experience and concept of God, and then it changes. Teresa, in her autobiography, mostly encourages the cataphatic experience of God. The imagery that she uses of the well, for example, promotes our practicing to experience God in creation and in imagination. John in the Ascent promotes the apophatic experience of God. We are to practice being nothing with morality and discipline. Both, however, gradually experience God calling them beloved. It is this experience that they are God's beloved that is most important. It provides them authenticity and a ground that is within and beyond themselves. It takes them out of their preferred concept of God, which they consciously or unconsciously protect and defend. It opens new vistas for them, though not completely. They begin to understand that their preferred concept of God is just that, a preference. It is something that they choose and make happen. When they experience God calling them beloved, however, they experience something happening to them. It isn't their choice. They don't make it happen. This doesn't mean that choosing, having a concept of God, and discipline, even morality, are bad things. Choosing, concepts, and discipline can be a good place to start. And eventually, they can provide us with examples of the numerous ways that we resist change and keep God at a distance. There are people who can say that they can pinpoint when this transformative experience happens or happened in their lives. But these are few. Paul of Tarsus experiences the risen Christ while on his way to kill or imprison people who are following the new way in Damascus. Bill W. of AA experiences a transformation as he listens to his former drinking partner. Teresa of Calcutta experiences a transformative moment with God while she travels on a train. Most of us, however, only gradually experience transformation, the lowering of our egoic boundaries, or the experience of being reborn or rebirth. We tend to only gradually discover that the concept of God that we have been carefully protecting and defending changes without explanation. Sometimes it happens over such a long period of time and so subtly that it takes us years to notice the change. It should be noted that individuals that I mentioned, though their experience can be pinpointed to a particular time, it takes them years to unpack it, for them to process what's going on. That's what we hear, for example, in Julian of Norwich. She has this experience of God, and then it takes her another 30 or 40 years to finally allow that to be unpacked within her, and that's essentially her writings, or her showings, as she says. It seems most often to take life intervening. That is something that we cannot control happens. For us to experience God calling us beloved, we have so many filters. We are so much in control. We're so practiced with that. This seems to be the case for Teresa and John, too. But I have not come across anything that provides a definitive and particular moment in Teresa or John's lives when they experience themselves as God's beloved. It seems to have gradually dawned upon them. They seem, like most of us, to arrive at this experience of being God's beloved only after numerous interactions with failure, pain, and suffering. The cataphatic experience of God grounds us in our divinely inspired humanity. It is the reason that the incarnation is so important. God dwells within us, is in union with the human person. God is in animals. God is in flowers, mountains, oceans, sunsets, art, and poetry. God is in all of creation. God is not persons, animals, art, and creation. That is pantheism. Rather, God is in persons, animals, art, and creation. This is panentheism. We short-circuit this experience of God by our conceptual understanding of Jesus as being a unique human being. That Jesus is different and separate from us. That Jesus is the only one with whom God is in union. And therefore, the only sacrifice that can mend the rift through atonement between God and us. Which speaks of a God who is distant from us as well. We stop experiencing God relationally and only think of God conceptually. The cataphatic approach to spirituality can help us to see that Jesus is no different than us. He is a human who experiences God in union with him. He experiences himself as God's beloved. This does not deny, but rather affirms that Jesus the Christ is the second person in the Trinity. He is fully human and fully divine. The one difference between Jesus the Christ and us is that Jesus the Christ is always divine. Our divinity has a beginning. This experience that he is God's beloved flows through him and gradually develops into the message that he does and proclaims. That message being, allow your minds to be transformed by doing, receiving and giving God's mercy. He doesn't think about God. He does God. This receiving and giving is expressed through his teaching and healing. The apophatic experience of God, momentarily, eliminates boundaries. We can't keep, maintain, or defend what we can't see. It is the raw and painful experience of life. It is an experience that causes suffering as it defeats any thought that we have of being in control. It is the reason that the death and resurrection of Jesus is important. The death of Jesus is the brutal experience of not having control, of having life happen to us. There is no choice, no purpose, nothing redeemable. The resurrection is God who is beyond us, freeing us to somehow relate with mystery and darkness. Somehow relate in being rejected and defeated. Somehow relate that we have, in this darkness, in this defeat, that we are grounded in God, who calls us beloved. Somehow we know that God can be trusted when life intervenes in ways that are painful, senseless, and undoing. We short-circuit this experience by once again conceptually misinterpreting Jesus' divinity to mean that he is a superior human. The various warrior images of Jesus, such as Mel Gibson's The Passion, suggest that he can endure all of the horrors and tortures because he is more than human. Because he has a plan and a purpose. He therefore maintains control, even when it appears that he is defeated. The apophatic experience of God can help us to know that the torture and crucifixion of Jesus has no purpose. It is senseless violence that erupts from fear. And God, who is infinitely free, uses this senseless act of violence to help Jesus, and then us, experience that life is more than our limited minds, that are stuck on meaning and purpose. Our minds can only comprehend just so much. Life is God, and God is life dwelling within us. Resurrection. We cannot capture God intellectually or with a purpose. When we try, we put obstacles in the way and learn new ways to resist experiencing God's mercy. God's freedom, which is represented as mystery and darkness, is expressed in loving mercy, because this is who God is. Teresa and John, on their better days, don't attempt to cause change to happen. They don't make heroic choices. Rather, they experience anew that which grounds them, that they are beloved of God. Maybe, on our better days, we can imitate them as they, on their better days, imitate Christ Jesus.